when people are bringing out new products to do this or that, you know, do they work? Which ones work best? And, you know, when I'm actually working in the garden center, that was always a good way of you could give advice to your customers because what it worked well and you know whether it works or not.
Welcome to the Underground Podcast. I'm Kate, the gardener guru, horticultural consultant and writer and presenter on all things gardening.
And I'm Phil, co-founder of Right O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for the home and garden sectors. Join us in conversation with those people shaping the UK's garden care industry.
So without further ado,
let's get down and dirty. Hi there, Kate.
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you very much. It's been a really busy start to the year, but good. I am really excited about who we're going to be talking to today.
Well, why don't you tell us who we're going to be having in the hot seat?
So we're going to be chatting with Peter Burks, who's the CEO of the Garden Centre Association, the GCA.
Right. Yep, indeed.
And I think other than Boyd, who we spoke to quite a long time ago, because we're, can you believe we're 50 episodes in?
Oh, my goodness.
So other than Boyd, this will be the first person we've spoken to really about garden centres. So I think it'll be good.
Yeah, and it's about time, really, isn't it? Because we've talked to manufacturers, influencers, buyers, growers. But really, we want to talk to the people who are, you know, on the ground, as it were. And he's certainly the person to talk to because not only is he, you know, CEO, he's got a huge history and huge background, all to do with growing and horticulture and garden centres. So, yeah, really looking forward to hearing what he's got to say.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating. So, shall we dive in?
Shall we crack on? Indeed.
Okay. So we're delighted to welcome onto the show today Peter Burks, the CEO of Garden Centre Association. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. And I'm going to kick off straight away with you were working in the industry, the garden centre industry, for around 40 years before taking on the challenge of CEO of the Garden Centre Association. Can you just give us a little flavour of the roles that you've had in those 40 years?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So I'm man and boy. Garden centre industry, which is really nice. I think it all started for me because my parents were farmers, and so I've been in the growing industry from that point of view from once I was a little lad, and I can even remember my father planting. He was always the keen grower in the family, planting those rigid rows of alyssum and lobelia and red salvias many, many years ago. And he carried on the growing thing on the farm. So he was growing organic vegetables. He was growing them long before it was trendy and long before there was any money in it as well, I think. But, you know, again, that was something that I was very used to, you know, growing things at home. So that was really where my interest started. And then from that, I decided I would go to university and read horticulture, which I did at the University of Bath, which, again, from my point of view, was a really good course because it was a four-year course, sandwich course. So you went out into industry every now and again. And we did. I did growing in Somerset, growing tomatoes and cucumbers. Right. I did growing in Hampshire with cut flowers, chrysanthemums, roses. And then spent 6 months in Holland growing gerberas, which very interesting. And that was, you know, all really good. And then our course, actually, interesting enough, 2 years was very much around science, you know, botany, biochemistry, that sort of soil science, which actually suddenly is becoming a bit more trendy as well, which is quite nice.
Absolutely.
And then did 2 years of business studies. So you had a very good basis for being able to go into business.
That sounds a brilliant. Is that course still running? Do you know? That sounds an amazing course.
Unfortunately not. No. Even in Monday, I think we only had about 20 people on our course. Several who made it into the industry and, you know, I worked with for quite a long time, but unfortunately, no, that all came to an end quite some time ago. Yeah, very sad, really. There's not many courses going at all now.
So after your course, where did your career take you then?
Well, then I worked for a while with my parents, actually, because they'd sort of developed more like a market garden, that sort of thing. Stayed doing that for quite a while in the growing. And also, of course, you then move into more retailing. You realize that actually growing is one part of it, and that's the bit that I really enjoyed. But actually, you know, you have to be able to sell things. And I moved from there to Sanders Garden World, which was a brand new garden center built in Somerset. And ran that for quite a few years. The owner of that sold out to Wyvale. And I moved into corporate world. Yeah, which is very different. But, you know, certainly from that point of view, it does mean that you get that, you know, balance between what independents are and what the corporate world is like. And during my time in at Sanders, when we were an independent, that's when I first had my first interaction with the GCA, because we joined then as a member. Because I think, you know, when you are just one on your own, you don't really know quite what you're, whether you're doing well, not well, you know, what's the rest of the world doing. You know, you can read the press, but far better to be able to talk to people, isn't it? So
absolutely.
From Wyvale days, I ended up in Trelawney down in Cornwall. They sold to Blue Diamond, and so I ended up in Blue Diamond. And had a very, very nice time there down in South Devon for about 6 or 7 years before then, fortunately, this role came along, which, you know, I was very grateful to be accepted to take it on.
It's a varied career in throughout the industry, but you've stayed within that industry for all those years. And from a young child, that just says a lot about how amazing this industry can be, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's what you find in the industry. I think it's a very warm, friendly industry. Obviously, it's a fairly relaxed industry, despite, you know, all the pressures that every business has. You know, that's definitely something that's got, you know, greater and greater over the years. But you know, very enjoyable to be in, and you know, certainly now having been in it for so long, you know, I do know a lot of people, which is really nice and makes, you know, my current role a lot easier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you mentioned there in your sort of potted history that you shared with us about the GCA and the Garden Centre Association. Perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about the Garden Centre Association and what their mission is.
Right. Well, interesting enough. So the Garden Centre Association was started about, must be nearly 60 years ago now, by people who were at the very forefront of the garden centre industry, because, you know, that was when garden centres first started. Before that, there was only really nurseries. Nurseries became sort of more retail nurseries, and then the garden centres developed. And I think they could see they needed to have, you know, like-minded people needed to get together to sort of drive the industry forward, which was, you know, obviously a very good thing. And, you know, no doubt, you know, that was has resulted in the industry being as successful as it is. And I think really the mission was to, again, exactly that, to get like-minded people together who could then discuss and forge ways forward, you know, work out the best, you know, routes for the industry to go. And that's really been the mission over the years, is to you know, through collaboration to help all businesses improve and do better.
Right.
So it's not just for independent garden centres now.
No, anybody can be a member. So it, yeah, any, we count, you know, individual garden centres as members. So yes, even if you're part of one of the groups, that's definitely fine. And you know, all the major groups are actually members, apart from Dobby's at the moment. And you know, and they don't all have to put all their members in if they don't want to. We have sort of rules around how many they have to put in to be members, but and that's really only on a financial thing, because obviously the more garden centers they have in, the more they have membership they have to pay. So, you know, if we make a few little alterations to that, you know, they can get the benefits without having to pay so much money in.
So how would you say your kind of extensive experience and background has influenced your approach to leading the association, Peter?
Well, I think, I'm lucky in some ways in that I have seen both sides of the retail side of the interest industry in the independents and the corporates, you know, because they are obviously very different. But, you know, while some people would say, you know, one side's got nothing they can learn from, and the other side could say, no, they've got nothing that I can learn from. In actual fact, they both do things quite differently, but there's a lot of good bits on both sides too, and different bits, of course, there has to be. And so, you know, from my background, if you like, then I can understand where both sides are coming from, which I think is quite an important thing. And also, knowing people, that's another side of it. You know, as I mentioned already, when you know a lot of people, you can have they know your background and you know their background. And so it's very easy to get along and work out where the common ground is and how you can make progress on projects and that sort of thing.
And I suppose people know that you know where they're coming from. They can't just say, well, you don't know what it's like being an independent, quiet little in the middle of nowhere. You've just been blah, blah, blah. So that you can come back, well, no, actually, yes, I have. I've been there. I know what you're going through. So that's going to really help members as well. So can you tell us about any specific initiatives that have been implemented to help member centres grow and adapt, especially in the context of recent kind of difficult industry challenges?
Right. So probably the most recent thing I would say is have been around the peat-free compost, right. Because obviously that has been a massive change for the industry. Quite rightly, everybody would say, peat is something that we shouldn't be digging out of the ground. And, especially from the fact that it stores so much carbon, so it's not just destroying the actual peatlands itself. We're also releasing the carbon and we shouldn't be doing that. So, we do understand that. But of course, peat has been a most fantastic product to be able to use for growing. And I think we also appreciate now when you see all the attempts to try and get some alternatives, how difficult that is.
Yeah.
Our compost manufacturers are doing fantastic jobs on working on new initiatives and finding it's the volume is one of the things. The good thing with peat, there was unlimited volume out there. Never going to be a problem to keep producing absolutely standard batches of compost. Whereas now, if you're using all sorts of other sorts of organic material, recycled material, you've got to, again, try and get a consistency through all of those. And that has been really difficult. We've appreciated that both from the supplier side and, of course, within the garden centre side, caring for plants, and then for our customers who really also don't understand, what compost is. In some ways, we use the word compost. Well, compost we use for potting things in pots and for sowing seeds in, but compost is also something that you make in a big pile in the garden and then chuck it on the garden, So I think some of the words are a little bit difficult for people. And of course, some people then refer to bags of compost as dirt.
Dirt,
It's not really what it is. And I don't think the manufacturer would like to know that all the hard work they put into producing this product is then just called dirt. But we realize that people, I go out and do quite a lot of talks to gardening clubs and that sort of thing. And for the last probably 4 or 5 years, probably even pre-COVID, people have been saying, what is going wrong with the compost? They really don't understand it. And finally, I think we've decided that, the consistency is much, much better, but we need to be doing more around
education
staff and the customers on how they use that compost. So we've done about 5 of our e-learning courses to give the staff confidence in what is going on, why is the change happening, and so on and so forth. But also, we've just done now some, in collaboration with the RHS, we've done some videos which we are going to release this spring, in actual fact, that the garden centers can have either playing in the garden center on websites, educating. And we're going to basically tell them, that peat-free compost is different and you do need to look after your plants different as a result of the change. And this is something I think has been a really big thing.
Yes.
And we've also, in association with the HTA, Horticultural Trades Association, it's really the umbrella body over the whole industry, and they were quite interested, the growers particularly within them were interested in doing some work on this as well. And of course, they are quite different in some ways to the garden centers because they're growing often specific crops. So it's much easier for them to get their compost, their new compost, right for what they're growing. But I don't really think that expertise has been passed down the line to either garden center staff and certainly as far as the customers. So the HTA have been organising some meetings, really, with different forums so that growers, retailers can get together and talk about how you grow plants better in the new compost. And I think that is also going to be really good help to the garden centre owners and plantarium managers and plantarium staff to get that right. Because, again, in the old days, you know, the plants grown in peat-based compost survived quite happily in the garden centre, you know, for years even without you doing more than watering them. Whereas now people will say, you know, by midsummer you can see that you need to be feeding plants that haven't had any feed that have been there for a while.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite a change. And so, you know, we kind of need to get this in. So that's probably one of the biggest new initiatives that we have done. And hopefully that will get confidence out in the general public again. And, you know, we want to get, you know, them to be successful because success definitely breeds success.
Absolutely. I mean, that sounds a wonderful initiative and about time really for it to be happening, because it is, at the end of the day, it's the customer coming in who's buying from us, you know, they're not going to come back, you know, and they might not know about the peat-free. They might just blame themselves, you know. It's a really interesting one, isn't it? But I mean, I think what we forget is that garden centres started because of peat, wasn't it? It was because of peat compost coming into, you know, into use that suddenly we could have container plants to take away. So that's how they started. So for it to suddenly be taken away, I mean, it's a real, real challenge, but it sounds like everyone's embracing that. And, you know, we're just going to be going forward. And I just absolutely, I mean, Phil and I are great believers in education, aren't we, Phil?
We certainly are. Yeah.
We've done many videos about it.
I've been quite interested to know, Peter, does the GCA actually have an official line on the peat-free debate? And are you encouraging your members to transition completely to peat-free, or are you still saying actually there's a need for both, or what's your line?
Well, we don't actually have an official line, so the GCA doesn't have an official line. But I think from what I've already said, you know, we know that the use of peat has to stop. So therefore, we have been supportive of the changes that have been happening, and you know, within the GCA, if you like, we've got members who are both, you know, so keen, they want to get rid of peat at all costs, you know, and that's where they're going. Right. Mm-hmm. Even if in some ways it affects their business financially, but they realize that's the way they've got to go. So they're going to go down that route. So you've got the pioneers, and then you've probably got some at the other end of the scale, you know, still thinking, you know, we know that peat's a great compost. It grows great plants.
Yeah.
And, you know, it helps our customers out. So, you know, we're not going to change till we really have to.
Yeah, yeah.
That having been said, I think we're aware that, I think through the feedback from the manufacturers, that, you know, the amount of peat going into compost is now down to about something like 10% or less.
Yeah.
So it really is a small amount. And quite a number of our garden centre members are now completely peat-free on the retail side.
Right.
See, you know, the plants coming in will still sometimes have peat in them. Yeah. But, you know, some of those nurseries are now completely peat-free as well.
Peter, how about the numbers within the GCA? How are they doing currently? And are you seeing any growth there?
Yep, so the good news is we have, at the moment, 215 individual garden centre members, and that has steadily increased. So back even when I was chairman, 2012, 2013, we were about 150. So you can see that has increased steadily. Okay. I think we added on about 8 new members last year. We've got 4 extras lined up to join this year already. So, you know, steadily increasing. And they are all over the country too, everywhere from Cornwall to, I think, Inverness, furthest north. We've got 5 in Northern Ireland, quite a few in Wales. So all over the country, they're really well spread everywhere.
So, Peter, can you just tell us a bit about the benefits that the members can get from the GCA?
Yes, certainly. So I always say that the biggest benefit, I think, is you join an organisation full of like-minded people.
Right.
So you can, you almost like, is a way, just a way of getting in to be able to chat to people about all sorts of things. And, you know, we certainly know that there's, you know, garden centres just up the road from each other who on the face of it should be the biggest rivals going and never speak to each other. Actually, completely the other way around. You know, they're the best of mates. And
oh, great.
You know, one's doing well, they want to know how the other one's doing, and, you know, and so on and so forth. So yes, I would say the main benefit still is you're joining an organization where you can then talk about what you're doing, what they're doing, and, you know, and actually get some benefit from being in a big organization rather than being one little person on your own where you don't really know what's going on and not going.
Yeah. So it's that knowledge exchange.
Yeah. You know, just sharing, you know, sharing a problem, sharing an idea, and anything like that is going to be a good thing. And, you know, there's, no matter what your idea is, somebody somewhere amongst the GCA will have done that before and tell you whether it's a good idea or don't waste your time.
So what are the forums that exist for the members then within the GCA?
Well, actually, we have a WhatsApp group, so you can post on that. We don't particularly have like formal forums. There's not we'll meet on every, you know, Tuesday afternoon and you can say what you want. We certainly in recent times have done quite a good range of webinars where you can join. And what we try and do is pick a topic, get a couple of speakers, which again could be members. And then we try and encourage then the audience to share their experiences. So that is, you know, another good way of getting that sharing out there. Yeah. And then we do through our inspection process, which, you know, is another of the big benefits of being part of the organization, is that we do both pre-inspection meetings on an area basis, and then we do post-inspection meetings, which become sort of like awards. And they would be attended by over 100 people in each area. We have four areas currently. Okay. So again, you know, lots of people come to those and, you know, again, can face-to-face share. And of course, our biggest one is our conference, which, you know, again, attended by several hundred people over the course of the 2 days. And again, you know, great place to meet up.
So when you say inspections, is it you go is it like a RHS kind of judging committee? You go to garden centres and see what they're doing right and how their displays are, or not quite that formal?
Is it more like Ofsted?
I think it probably is a bit more like Ofsted, actually. So all of our members have to be, or garden centre members have to be inspected every year. Okay. And they have to score at least 50%. Otherwise, they can be asked to leave. Ooh. And it's the same if people are wanting to join. We would send one of our inspectors round to inspect them prior to joining. And so long as they score more than 50%, then we are happy for them to join in. So there is, you know, a bit of a rule there that, you know, this is a way of keeping the standards up, right? You know, and we have a very rigorous mm-hmm. process, which is about the inspection sheet covers about 220 different factors.
Ooh, wow.
So and the inspection, whilst the garden centers know when the inspection window is, which is usually about mid-March to mid-June, mm-hmm. they don't know when the inspector's going to turn up. So there's ready for the inspector on Wednesday morning, he will or she will just turn up unannounced sometime in that period.
Goodness.
And so then they are judged or inspected, everything from how they look from the main road to the car park to the entrance to all the retail areas, the toilets, and including things like their websites, their social media.
Right.
That all gets scored. We also do mystery phone calls and emails to see how they respond to those. Do they answer the phone within 6 rings and that sort of thing? And all of that gets scored. At the end of the inspection, the inspector then will sit down with the center and do a little bit of a feedback session. So they get some feedback from the inspectors. Obviously, our inspectors, generally speaking, are all, you know, knowledgeable people in the industry. Yeah. So that, you know, they have got some good ideas and they can give them feedback on where they think they're doing well and obviously not so well. And then, of course, they do get access to that form so they can see how well they've scored, what they've done well on, what they haven't done so well on. Right. And again, that's another thing that they can then compare to perhaps their neighbours or other colleagues and say, well, how did you do? And, you know, how could we do better on this?
Right. So that sounds quite daunting, but actually, at the, you know, the long-term goal is that it's just going to help you improve your centre, isn't it? So there's no reason not to kind of join because of that, you know. And if you're not scoring well, then, yeah, you need to pull your socks up and yeah, that, but you've got all the resources to help people kind of do better, I presume.
Yes. And we, the other side of it, of course, is not just about scoring well for the inspection sheet. You know,
yeah.
we are aware, and, you know, for example, Klondike Garden Centre is a really good example of that, who over the last probably 5 or 6 years have worked really hard on taking their scores up.
Right.
But they've also found that if you score better, your financial performance also improves.
Ooh.
And really is definitely a case of, you know, better standards equals better business, you know, and that I think really
that's
important
really good
thing.
Yeah.
And clearly the ones who are very, very good, you know, the difference at the top is, you know, tiny amounts of percentage, you know, because they're all doing such a great job, and trying to find a little, you know, that tiny little thing that's going to make you even better is really hard. But, you know, it's a very good reason to be a member, I think, because you can use that. Somebody completely external comes to look at your business and tells you whether you're doing, you know, or where you're doing well and where you're perhaps not doing quite so well.
Yeah, you're not having to pay a consultant lots of money to tell you what you need to do. You've got the organisation and the support behind it.
Yeah. So, Peter, have you noticed any recent changes in consumer behaviour or sort of market trends?
Right, the main market trends in this last year, because, you know, as you would know, you know, garden centres are so driven by the weather. So when the weather is right, and obviously that's not, doesn't mean to say it has to be sunny all day every day, because that really wouldn't work either. But, you know, when the weather is right at the right time of the year, you know, garden centres will always do well through the gardening side of the business.
Yeah.
But of course, this last year, you know, in all my years in the industry, I have never known a spring to have no decent weather at all. In the south of the country, that was true. And I think even, you know, other places might have had a week of decent weather, but, you know, we've never had such a bad spring from that point of view.
It was terrible.
Yeah. So then, you know, garden centres are reliant on this, all the work they've done effectively over the years to mean that they're not dependent solely on the weather and not dependent solely on the gardening season.
Right.
And so, the big trend, if you like, this last 12 months has been in the restaurants.
Yeah.
Okay.
The restaurant sales have been absolutely fantastic. And also around food halls, farm shops also do really well. And, you know, as so one garden centre manager told me many years ago, you know, my customers garden twice a year, but they eat every day. That is so very true, you know, and it's, you know, I think in our barometer of trade, which we have for members to put in their sales figures, the restaurants last year compared to 2023 are up about 12%, which is, you know, a huge increase. But of course, what it does is that gives you footfall. It's always bringing people in. And I think, again, the quality of catering within garden centres, if you said maybe even only 10 years ago that, you know, the best place to go for lunch in the daytime will be a garden centre, most people would have laughed at you.
Oh,
but
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the quality of food is absolutely first class, and also the service and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can come to a garden centre, park for free, you know, you can walk around for an hour and entertain yourself and also have a nice meal, a nice cup of coffee and so on. So, you know, that is just so important. And I think the other side of that, just talking about the trends of the last 12 months, you know, giftware sales, generally speaking, have been quite positive because, again, I think people haven't been able to go outside because of the rain. So at least they're there, they've got some money to spend, and so they spend it on some giftware. So, again, that diversification into other product groups. Christmas also did well, probably the same reason again. So, you know, from my point of view, you can see like the wet weather departments have done well this year. And the gardening not quite so well.
So within that wet weather department that you sort of talk about there or allude to, would you categorise houseplants within that? And would you say there's like an opportunity there for garden centres?
Right, houseplants is quite an interesting one because, again, in probably until, I don't know, 5 years ago maybe, houseplants were on a general decline.
Right. Okay.
You know, houseplant sales have never sort of like got back to what they were, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Yes.
And then suddenly young people got into cacti.
Right.
And I can always remember my daughter buying her house and telling me, showing me round and saying, and this is in the kitchen, this is where I'm going to put my cactus shelf.
Oh.
And I nearly fell over. I thought, my hearing, you know, this is, cactus are so important. They're going to have their own shelf in the kitchen. And of course, that was just brilliant because, you know, they young people got into looking after plants. And if they did start with cacti, that was great. But they've then gone on from that. And, you know, and the other interesting part around that is young people also, they'll also buy everything that they need to have to go with it. So they always buy pot covers. Again, in my time in the industry, you know, you always tried to sell pot covers with houseplants, but nearly always you couldn't. So you might sell one pot cover per 10 houseplants, whereas nowadays almost all the time you sell the cover with the plant because people seem to be, or certainly the younger people seem to be, that's part of what you get. And they get the right color to fit their decor in the house and all those sorts of things, you know, it's a completely different thing. So houseplants have suddenly become much more important to lots and lots of people. And I think maybe some of that has been the orchids, you know, the phalaenopsis orchids, you know, now so readily available, so they're such great value, flower, and all the rest of it, you know, they are really good. And the other good news is we've also, whereas, you know, until a few years ago, all houseplants tended to be imported from Holland, you know, or further afield. You know, now and all are grown in this country, which again is really good, and grown peat free as well. So,
We had Ed Hill from the Horty House.
His episode's out today.
Oh, is it really? Oh, there we go.
Oh, well, brilliant. Yeah, no, I know Ed very well. Yeah, so yeah, they're excellent nursery, and what they produce and what they've done is really good.
Fantastic. So you mentioned about the GCA conference, and that's going to be happening fairly soon, the end of January. So can you just give us an idea about what the topics and challenges are that you expect will be at the forefront of the discussions that will be happening there?
I think the biggest topic of discussion actually won't be anything to do with our conference. I think it'll be around the increased costs that we've just had dropped on the industry, or dropped on all industry, particularly small and medium-sized businesses, you know, with the increase in the national insurance and the continued increase in the minimum wage costs. Because, you know, certainly the figures I've heard bandied about from our members is, you know, this is going to cost £250,000 a year. Oh, you know, the earnings going to cost them £1 million a year. And, you know, that's a huge amount of extra cost. Absolutely. And it's one of these costs that for which you get nothing back. You know, it's not like you buy stock, therefore you've got something to sell. You've just got to pay that money out and you don't get any more. And I would say, you know, certainly from the government point of view, I know they've got to try and find money from somewhere, but it is very short-sighted. And, you know, their view that, you know, well, they can just dip into their savings. Well, you know, businesses don't have that amount of savings. And even if they did, they'd be saving up to spend it on the next investment, which obviously would develop the business further. So there's certainly been a lot of discussion already around that, how we can, you know, work ways around of making businesses either work more efficiently, you know, how can you save costs and so on, because, you know, it's been going on for a while now. So I think that is going to be one of the big topics. But the other ones, from the conference point of view, we're doing something completely different on the Sunday, which is we're calling it a retail safari around London, because the event is going to be held at Reading. And whilst we probably never would do one in London simply because hotel costs would be too high, we've got a meeting with Matthew Brown, who's a retail trends expert, and he's going to do a presentation and then send people on a route around London to see hopefully some interesting retail practices.
Wonderful. That's a great idea.
And so that's retail practices, not just within sort of plants and selling and stuff. It's going to be sort of just retail in general.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's really good, isn't it? Because it's very easy for garden centres just to get so focused on plants, and the giftware. But yeah, let's see what other people are doing and just implement some of those practices. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, and I think that's been, again, another thing the industry has been quite good at over the recent years has been always looking at what else goes on elsewhere. And, you know, I'll drop this in now as well. And of course, we're also members of the International Garden Centre Association, which there's about 20 different countries in that. And every year there's an International Garden Centre Association Congress where you go to a different country. You know, we've hosted several in this country. But for example, last year was in Canada. This year will be in South Africa. Oh. Next year it's in Germany. And then you go off and they, you know, show you around what they're doing in their countries. But it's very, very interesting then to see what's going on elsewhere. But also you get to chat to, you know, garden centre operators from 20 different countries and see what their problems are and what their ideas are and, you know, how they're taking their businesses forward, which is just a fantastic, again, sharing of ideas and trends.
So have you actually got any examples of things where you've talked to somebody and you've gone, that's a really good idea? I'll talk to some people back here.
I've got to say there would be lots, but to recall one off the top of my head now.
No, that's fine.
I mean, it's even, you know, in our conference, we have our inspectors all do presentations showing best practice that they've seen around. Okay. It's a great opportunity. And then, of course, full of photographs. So without having to visit, you know, 200 garden centres, you can actually sit there on the in the presentation hall and see all these good ideas. And you know, in my past role, I would take away pages and pages and pages of good ideas, which you would then go back to your own garden centre and start putting into practice. Even, you know, anything from little words on a point of sale card, you know, isn't that a clever way of saying that, you know, and adopt it so easily and at no cost. So, yeah, there is definitely always good ideas.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, so Peter, we've already alluded to the fact that garden centres are renowned for their cafes. What's your go-to treat when during a visit?
You know, that depends on the time of year. At Christmas time, I have to have a mince pie everywhere I go. Okay. So that becomes like the mince pie competition, doesn't it?
Right.
Who's got the best mince pie? And I think my prize for that will go to Bent's without doubt, because they have the most unusual mince pie, which is completely different to anything you see.
And so
they're absolutely fantastic. Then the rest of the year, scones, scone. It's got to be, hasn't it? Again, they vary. And I think, I suppose, from my interest, it's not, you know, why would you do it? But you know, more like you can get some view of how good they are. And of course, they nearly always tend to be homemade. So it's giving you a real indication about how well in my opinion, of course, how well they're doing in their homemade cakes.
I know. Well, although I'm Devon based, I must admit the best scone I ever had was up in a garden centre up north.
Yes.
I can't remember the name. And it was as big as my head, but it was absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And just the amount of cream I needed. I mean, it was ridiculous, but I was doing a workshop for them on planting up summer containers and they tried to give me two and I was just like, no. So really, you know, the West Country should be producing the best, but that one has to get my vote. So, Peter, you've talked about your background, your family background, you've been growers. But do you actually enjoy gardening yourself? Do you get time to garden?
Oh, crikey, yes, I do. Yeah, and I love gardening myself, yeah. And again, probably there's two sides to this. I just love plants, so I can't ever resist plants, you know, whether they're houseplants, got loads and loads of houseplants, probably got nearly 100 houseplants, as well as, you know, plants in my garden. And so every time you see something that's a bit different, you think, I got to have one of those.
Right.
See what that does.
Yeah.
And the other side of it is I do like to see almost like a trial when you see something in, you know, this one of your suppliers has come up, one of the nurseries has come up with, and I think I'm going to give that a try just to see if it works or not. Yeah, I can always remember somebody, and I can't remember which nursery it was, brought out a hanging basket buddleia.
Oh, right.
And I thought, no. I don't in a minute, but I thought I'm going to buy one and see how it does. And I'll tell you what, it's absolutely fantastic. It grows into a lovely little mangy plant. And I've never seen it on sale since.
I've never seen that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, tiny little buddleia. And it's absolutely fantastic.
And still going?
Yeah, it's I've had it for years and years and years. Yeah. I've got to try and find another one now because they are really good. I'm saying then I also like to use different products in the garden. So again, like good example now obviously would be around the peat-free compost. You know, I'll all sorts of different ones just to see what I think is the best.
Yeah.
Right. But also when people are bringing out new products to do this or that, you know, do they work? Which ones work the best? And, you know, when I'm actually working in the garden center, that was always a good way of you could give advice to your customers because what it worked well and you know whether it works or not. But to me, gardening is a real outlet for, you know, when you want to have a wander around and free your mind from everything else, get away from the keyboard.
Absolutely.
But you know, it's a great thing to do. And, you know, I really do really enjoy it.
Oh, wonderful. And do you have a favorite plant or flower that will always put a smile on your face, no matter kind of how fed up or miserable you might be feeling?
So I suppose plant groups that I like, I'd have to say, would be roses.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Particularly the old-fashioned ones and the heavily scented. Got to be scented.
Right. Yeah.
I do love anything scented or aromatic.
Yeah.
Fuchsias.
Okay.
And that's partly because my mum loved fuchsias. Oh. And so, you know, and again, there's everything from the great big ones to the tiny little ones. You know, I think they've all got something nice. And clematis, because again, I think a lot of the work that Raymond Everson's done on these smaller, not top flowering ones, but, you know, again, fantastic. And they'll grow so many different places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, flowering, you know, you can have one in flower 12 months of the year.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose one plant, it would have to be a tree because I do love trees.
Okay. Fantastic.
So I'm going to say my favorite plant would be a red horse chestnut.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, but you need some space to grow that.
I was thinking that.
Yeah, you would.
Do you have somewhere where you can go and see them, or do you have a big, big garden so you can have one yourself?
We've certainly got some in the town here, so that there, yeah. I couldn't grow one in my garden now, but my previous garden, we planted about 80 different trees.
Oh, goodness.
Wow. Yeah, so it was fantastic, yeah.
That's an arboretum, not a garden.
Yeah, nearly, yeah, well.
Definitely. So, yeah, you definitely are a hands-on CEO in what you do. You know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, do. Love the plants.
Lovely.
So, Peter, I think that just about wraps things up for today. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience and the work that you're doing with the GCA. That's been really interesting.
And your knowledge. Thank you for your time. Thanks so much, Peter.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Dou. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, or sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.